Well, as we do every fortnight, we're going to head off now to Canberra to catch up with all the goings on, and there have been plenty of them in Canberra, with Canberra Times political correspondent Sarah Basford-Canales. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Jeff. I come to you from cloudy Canberra.
Oh, mate, it is sun shining over here. But I'm a little bit boondoggled where to start this week. There has been so much over the past week gone down with a sitting week happening. But look, let's start with national security at the moment. This one is really just ticking me off. Talks of Manchurian candidates. Seriously, what's going on over there? That's some pretty ugly mud to be slinging.
It definitely is. We've obviously seen ASIO came out with their annual threat assessment 2 weeks ago, which it feels like 3 months already, but where they talked very vaguely about a foreign interference plot that they foiled. And obviously since then, lots of rumours and speculation has gone wild as to who was targeted in that foreign interference plot. And, of course, we had Defence Minister Peter Dutton make allegations that Anthony Albanese was the pick for the Chinese Communist Party. And then we've just sort of seen it escalate since there, with the PM referring to Deputy Opposition Leader Richard Miles as a Manchurian candidate. And we've seen it get particularly ugly. But of course, you know, the real reason, or, you know, potentially the real reason behind this all is that national security tends to be something that people use when they're quite desperate to win an election. You know, you kind of scare the populace into thinking the threat is bigger. And that's not to say that there isn't a threat there, of course, but the idea is that you sort of drum up that threat so that you can show, you know, the population that you're the one to deal with it. And make the other side look weak. So it's a pretty, you know, tried and tested campaign technique. But
the kicker is that, I mean, it actually has a real effect on, ironically, national security.
Who would have thought?
Wow!
this is the thing. Every time, you know, a politician says something, you know, and obviously at the moment the big bad is China and Russia. So every time they say something that's negatively, you know, representing them in the Australian media, it's really ammunition for both China and Russia to reflect back and go, see, this is exactly why we have these tense relations. So it plays into their hand as well. The other issue, and this was mentioned by ASIO's Director General Mike Burgess following his threat assessment, when people were sort of questioning and quizzing him as to who was, you know, behind the foreign interference plot and who they were targeting, he said it's actually important to remember that when we start to you know, say things like the Chinese Communist Party are trying to get involved in the federal election, it actually, you know, sort of distances the Chinese community as well. And so, you know, we can see more racism come up, and that's really not the sort of division we want in Australia. And again, that also plays into the hands of potentially foreign adversaries.
So it's just negative all round. So why isn't there some mechanism by which, you know, they can get a bit of a spank body over this? I mean, it's just it's silly behaviour from people who should be acting more maturely. I mean, isn't there some responsibility in the position that that Peter Dutton holds, that he shouldn't be throwing that sort of mud?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but that's the thing, right? At the end of the day, it's really about that personal or political responsibility, but it's, you know, he's not going to go to jail for saying it. But, you know, these sorts of things have real life effects within the community and also within geopolitics, which obviously we know at the moment is very tense. So Peter Dutton's obviously decided to go down that avenue, but I don't think many people would agree with it. But unfortunately, there's not much anyone can do about it other than point out sort of the truth and the facts. And just remind everyone that these sorts of tactics have been used in the past, and unfortunately sometimes they are quite successful. So it sort of shows, like, you know, a government on the fence here doing the last sort of bit that they can. They've brought out Scott Morrison's secret weapon, who is, of course, his wife, Jenny Morrison. And we've also seen them ramp up the national security rhetoric. So it definitely is a result of them being quite worried about where the election could go.
Well, funny you should mention that. Look, that was going to be my next point of discussion, Jenny. I mean, look, the secret weapon came out and it shot Scotty squarely in the foot. It just didn't play out well for a person who hangs their hat on being a marketing genius. I don't know. Are we back at first-year marketing and understanding that every brand has a life cycle and the life cycle of Jenny and Scott might be up?
Well, yeah, I guess we'll see when May comes around. But I think, they deployed Jenny to try and soften Scott Morrison's image. So he's sort of seen at the moment as this sort of federal force that's interfering with the states and making their lives harder. And obviously we've seen state leaders especially become particularly popular over the pandemic, whereas Scott Morrison's popularity has definitely taken a slide. But we've also seen Scott Morrison really, like, people don't really trust him. There's an issue, they don't feel like he's serious, they don't feel like he's honest and you know, full of integrity. So bringing out Jenny Morrison was really likely to do something with, like, softening that image and trying to make him seem, you know, more human and having empathy. Because obviously this is the character that, you know, famously bragged about having a little trophy in his office that says, "I stopped the votes," which, you know, just reminds you of the sort of person that would kind of have that. So obviously the Jenny weapon didn't quite work, but it seems like they're going to keep pushing that for as long as they can until they get something out of it. He'll keep mentioning Jenny from now election, just to remind everyone that he does indeed have a family, and that he does have feelings. So whether it works or not, I guess we'll wait and see, but it's definitely another one of those election campaign tactics.
Well, we've got a little bit more ground to cover here, Sarah. What I might do is just slide a tune on then, and when we come back, let's have a little bit of a look at how things played out for the government during the week on religious discrimination, and have a little bit of a look at what's going on with New South Wales pre-selection and the Liberal Party.
You're listening to On the Record.
Well, if you've just tuned in, we're chatting to Canberra Times political correspondent Sarah Basford-Canales about all the goings-on in federal politics in Canberra. Well, Sarah, it wasn't a pretty week either for the government when it came to them trying to wiggle through their religious discrimination bill.
Exactly. It was just another sort of setback for, I guess, the PM who's been dealing with a lot of them. It's relentless at this point. It marks another key election promise that's really been put to bed again, along with the federal ICAC. Obviously, we saw the government try to water down the bill a little bit in order to get Labor's support. But then we saw a lot of, backbenchers cross the floor and essentially disrupt that for the government. And in the same time, the conservative lobbies that sort of backed the original religious discrimination bill also said they didn't support it. So it was the government trying to appease both sides, but ultimately coming up with nothing.
Which left them looking pretty exposed. I mean, they were begging and walked away empty-handed.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and they really needed that, the religious discrimination bill to pass, and it's not completely dead. There's possibly another sitting week where it could be reintroduced, but it seems quite, unlikely that it will get passed in this parliament. And of course, it was, as I mentioned, one of the major election promises in 2019. So Scott Morrison really pushed the idea that religious discrimination bill would get passed, as well as the federal ICAC. And we've seen in the last 2 weeks both of those ideas fall flat.
Well, completely flat. I mean, what does that mean for the federal government? I mean, having things like the religious discrimination bill being backbenchers crossing the floor, how does it affect the federal government with things like a corruption commission being, hand-passed to the next sitting, to the next government?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing, right? That's something that Labor's likely going to you know, start ramping up in terms of their counter campaigns, the re-election, to the federal government's re-election, which will really focus on all these things that they didn't achieve in the 10 years of government that they've had, including stuff that was really key to their platforms, you know. So, and as we know as well, a lot of bills they do actually, I guess, the slate is swiped clean each time a new parliament's elected. So really it would be up to someone reintroducing those bills. And at this point, if it was to come in as they are, it's very hard to see them actually passing. It's just too contentious. There are so many sides split on this, and unless they get sort of Labor to back them, they ultimately won't be able to get it passed. So, well, yeah, just, I guess, another mark against the federal government's name.
Yeah, I mean, as you say, there's a sitting week coming up, but there's only two days where Senate and the lower house are sitting at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's really just dependent on whether they decide to cut their losses there. I think it's possibly unlikely that they're going to try that again. They just know it's a losing game and it's going to look ultimately embarrassing for them. And I think they're instead going to really focus or zone in rather on that, trying to create a wedge for Labor on national security, because I think that's where they think they could, I guess, gain the most advantage in such a short period.
Well, talking of wedges, can you just walk us through the New South Wales pre-selection issues? Because this just seems really bizarre that once again, reading the room, you've got the rank and file of the Liberal Party in New South Wales being overruled by the Parliamentary Party.
Yeah, I mean, look, I guess it's pretty funny for the factionalist party that their factions are creating such division within the biggest state in Australia. This one's really between the right faction, so the conservative faction. You've got Liberal Senator Concetta Fierra Vanti-Wells, kind of opposing, and with her supporters opposing, the more moderate and centre-right candidates, including Susan Ley, who is a cabinet minister, Alex Hawke, who is an assistant minister, and as well as Trent Zimmerman. So it's really going to cause a lot of issues. They've kind of got a little deadline that they need to resolve the issue, or Morrison's government's going to be stepping in and sort of resolving it for them. But that's only likely to anger, I guess, the Conservative faction in New South Wales as well. So it's definitely another watch this space, but, you know, you'd think with only potentially a maximum of 3 months to the election, they'd have this stuff sorted out, but it appears that they've really left it to the last minute, and part of that is because of the pandemic that's been going on. Obviously, Omicron came out of nowhere and completely derailed the plans that they all had, so this is just really another cog in the machine of
I was going to say, have I got the right take on that? Is this performance with the pre-selection really just silly behaviour by them when they should be putting forward a more unified front?
Yeah, definitely. I think they tried to put the unified front for many years, especially because Labor just looked like its own train wreck. But now we're seeing it come to the fore, because they've been in government now for 10 years nearly, and they're really, a lot of these factional players of, you know, they want their time in the spotlight. And I think, unlike, you know, previously, I think the Liberal Party is really struggling to kind of keep it all at bay. And that's what we're seeing right now, especially when you've got things like Alex Dorr being installed into Hughes, which is Craig Kelly's current seat, it's angering a lot of people who feel frustrated that the Liberal Party ultimately isn't allowing its rank and file to have their say over what it looks like.
Well, it's just interesting, given that it's the sort of meddling that they've frequently accused the Labor Party of in the past.
Yeah, exactly. And in the idea that, the Liberal Party doesn't have factions, which, of course, practically speaking, we know it does. And we're seeing that come out in play in the spotlight at the moment. So it's just another issue that I guess Morrison has to deal with he's sort of putting out little spot fires all over the place. And I think as the federal election gets closer, those spot fires are only going to grow bigger and pop up in more places. And we'll just have to wait and see if he has enough fire extinguisher for them all.
Oh, well, yeah, don't hold out your hopes on that one. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us again from Canberra, and look forward to talking to you in another 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Getting close to the election now.
Oh, mate, it's warming up. Talk to you soon. That's the Canberra Times political correspondent, Sarah Basford-Canales, joining us there from Canberra. You can catch her work actually online. If you go to the Canberra Times, put Sarah Basford-Canales, C-A-N-A-L-E-S, into the search bar at the top of Canberra Times website, and you will find her work. Some great writing there to find.